Namaste. So we speak today about loss events. Now normally when we talk about loss events, we think immediately about the grief that follows death of somebody. But loss events are a lot more complex, many-sided, subtle. There is possible that somebody may be living with someone and the person is not dead, yet there is loss. For example, there can be loss of love. There can be loss of prestige and respect, which can drive people to suicide. There is not just loss of wealth. There is loss of even a certain position that one held in society amidst people. There can be loss of somebody who has, you know, we know about Rishi Vishwamitra. After reaching a height, there is suddenly loss of many spiritual things that one had gained and, falls down. So loss event is not just about somebody's death and grief. When a heart breaks, for example, in a relationship, there is a loss. So how does one deal with this loss? Many people, of course, what should not be done first thing first is that they try to get into distraction. That, okay, keep, stay busy, do this, get into fitness thing, etc. And if you stay busy, after a while, time will heal it. Well, time heals it, but this is not healing. When we distract ourselves and we just put ourselves into various activities, we don't really look at it, understand it, then what happens very often, because we have not really worked ourselves through it, very soon, because it has gone into the subconscious, we end up with something very similar, which will again lead to frustration and unhappiness. It becomes like a vicious cycle, because we have not really looked at it in the face and learned the true lesson. So whenever we experience a loss event, let's say whether it be death or a relationship which has broken up, so first thing is to learn the lesson, and we cannot learn the lesson as long as we are in the blame game. The first thing is, I am wrong, I am bad, I have been rejected. Or it's like, why did he go away? I remember one old couple, and when they lived for 60 years together, not married, but they were always together. And when the man died and I had to break the news, the lady got so furious. And she literally said, why did he go away without telling me? Now, you see, this is a kind of anger which comes out when there is a loss. So these reactions, anger, complaint, guilt, did I not do the right thing? Where did I lack? They are all ignorant reactions. They don't help. We need to bring out. So some people say that we must express. Yes, we should express, but this is not the way of expression. This is a very ignorant way of expression. Yes, we will feel unburdened. If there is somebody to whom we can talk, we can cry, we feel unburdened. But it has not corrected, changed things inside. What we need, even some people talk about forgiving. Now, forgiving without understanding, that also doesn't help. So when we have to deal with such an event, a simpler way of expressing, very often people are looking for a shoulder on which they can cry, or a friend with whom we can discuss. But this is, except for that, it is an abreaction that we throw out the catharsis. It doesn't help, because friends are also ignorant. We may feel very good. We may even say, oh, it was so nice, I spoke to that friend and felt helped. But it has not helped. It's only the person has been like a dumping ground, like we have thrown it, and so there is some kind of a catharsis, and there is an empty space which was filled with grief. First it was filled with the person and his love or whatever, and then now, or his energy which we were fond of, now it is filled with grief. Now both are thrown away. There is an emptiness. This does not help. So first thing that I would suggest is that look at it and sit quietly, contemplate and reflect. How to contemplate and reflect? Go deep into the relationship. Go behind the name and form. A person, whether it's death or a broken heart, it's the same thing. What is it that the person represented for me? What is it that I am really missing? So one may discover that it was not the physical presence. You know, very often we think it's the physical presence. That is more of a habit. But something else, maybe the interchange of energies, maybe there was affection, care, understanding, sweetness. Sometimes there may be nothing and we discover, oh, it was just a habit, just the physical presence is not there. Now this, when it's just a physical presence, it doesn't last long. It's bound to break apart very soon. We don't have to worry much because it's a question of habit. But still, we must look very carefully. What is it that we are missing? What was the value of the person to us? Was it just money? Was it some kind of guidance? Was it protection? Was it some helpfulness? Whatever it is. So the intrinsic value of that person we have to see. Now then we have to go to the very source. Let me take an example. When people lose their parents, mothers, mother or father, mother. Mother is very more closer than father to some. So what have you? We lost all that motherhood represents. Care, fostering, nurturing, nourishing, all these things. These qualities are not limited to the person whom we physically regarded as our mother. If you really look very closely, these qualities are there in creation. That's why sometimes when we look into creation widely and deeply, we will discover that these things are there and they can bring us out of the deepest depression very soon. Take for example, looking at a flower helps us to come out of depression. Why flowers have this quality of generosity, giving, smiling, uncalculating, unselfish movement, all that we are looking for in somebody whom we love. And even in the best of persons, it's almost impossible to have these things. Because human beings are too much in the ego. Whereas the flowers represent it. So the quality that we were looking somewhere else is very naturally there in, looking at flower is one of the simplest ways. And they express us. They give it to us. So what we were looking for, see, human beings are like a conduit. But ultimately we know that behind all these instrumentality, it is the divine. It's because we are not able to directly contact the divine and discover the ultimate nurturer, fosterer. You know, Yajnavalkya's famous prayer, Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasyapi Hitam Mukham. So he uses terms like Tattvam Bhushanna Pavranu. Now he talks about he is the nourisher, he is the fosterer, he is the carer. Now why all these terms? Because when we go back to the source, all these qualities come from the divine. But we are not ready to receive. We need something very concrete, gross, physical. So that's why the divine has to represent himself in the form of a human persona or a deity or something which is very tangible to hold on to. Sometimes more subtle forms like an idea or a force which we can feel. So these are representations. So all human beings and objects in this creation are representations. Representations of what? The original. What is the original? The source. What is that? The divine. So, when we, instead of leaning on to human beings, which people do, and it may help temporarily, but it has really not solved anything, it's just a question of time when we'll end up with something else, something similar, little bit we grow in experience. So, simple way is to take a diary and write it to the Divine Mother. Or if somebody has belief in whatever way, write it to God, make a diary to God. He is the best friend, the best confidant. He understands us right from the depth. No human being can give this understanding. People go to psychiatrists. Now it helps because, you know, they speak out. But unless the psychiatrist has a real divine perception, which is a, you know, almost an impossible thing, even a spiritually awakened person in psychiatry, we are taught not to believe in spirituality. Most psychiatrists operate within the paradigms of Freud and Jung. There are exceptions, which is wonderful, but it's by and large. So they don't understand all these things. So they act according to that surface idea or a typical mental framework and systems. So why not directly to the divine? There is a prayer of the mother that I have wept before thee the sweetest tears of my life. And when we do that, my pride falls. See, one of the things that is injured is that we all live with what is called as an armor, outer armor. What is that outer armor? An image. Image of being somebody special, good. So what happens when people love each other or somebody loves you, that image gets strengthened. Oh, so and so praises me, now that image is getting strengthened. Now one day, the person who praises you breaks that image. Now it collapses, it slips. So it was like a bubble that collapses. Now when it collapses, it's very hurtful. Why? Because that armor, we never look at ourselves as we are. We are all the time the best people on earth. Everybody else is bad. But when somebody says something which brings down, collapsing as it were, the entire outer robes of decency, goodness, show and sham and pretense in which we were like a bubble living, actually we should be happy and thankful. But we are not, because we are not honest. We are not sincere. We want people to reinforce our ego. And hence, ego-based relationship, the hurt is very strong. Because the person was reinforcing the ego, and today when it collapses, it's like the whole world has collapsed. Because I identify myself with the ego self. So we see people, when they are too much identified with the ego self, either of oneself or of the community, maybe of the caste, maybe of the state, or even national identities, even humanity, it's nothing but an enlarged ego. Like somebody identified with humanity feels very distressed when they see human beings are suffering. As if the suffering of whales and seals and other creatures had no meaning. Only human suffering we are worried about. But when the consciousness is large and it identifies with the divine, then we go to the root of suffering. It has nothing to do with human beings or this or that. It has to do with matter. All life that is based on physical matter suffers. That's why the ultimate solution is physical transformation. Sri Aurobindo and the mother speak about it. The moment you accept a material body, matter is ignorant, matter is unconsciousness, matter is driven by forces of falsehood and darkness, matter is obscure, and the moment you take that body, even the best of human beings will get into the ego mode sometime or the other. Almost all. I mean, even the divine has to work upon it, and even somebody who is very evolved, the mother says, the moment he plunges into matter as it now is, another 100 years things would be different, because matter is becoming subtle and one day it will be transformed. So then taking birth in matter will not create any problem. But right now we plunge into it headlong, and because of the imperfection of matter, the consciousness even of a developed person, he acts like an unconscious person. And it takes some time, few decades, to regain that, because one has plunged into it headlong. And even then, it's still a little bit of journey before one can at least regain what one had lost. So we must understand, it's not this person or that person, it's the way life is organized, not because it is bad or miserable, but because it has evolved up till this point where matter is still like an animal. When we understand this, there is no need even to forgive. There is understanding. There is compassion. I remember one lady who was, you know, a very famous. She was a Russian, very famous artist, dancer, and all this. And when she was very old, I used to go and talk to her. She wanted to have some kind of dialogue. So one day she says, "I have a wonderful thing to share. I have a great discovery." I said, "Oh, please." It was so nice to see somebody in maybe 80s to say with excitement of a child and wonder that I have a great discovery to share. I said, "Yes, please go ahead." So she said, "You know, I have forgiven my husband." She was separated for decades, but she was carrying this grudge deep inside. So I said, "This is wonderful. But what is it that you discovered?" She said, "I discovered what is given in the Gita. That all human beings are like..." She was not remembering the phrase, so I reminded her, "Yantra Rudini Maya." I said, "Yes, yes, yes. Like fly on the wheel. Everybody is moving. So I can't blame him for anything. He was another fly on the wheel." Not very flattering to hear. But the fact is that it's not this human being or that human being. It is that life on earth is imperfect. You change human beings, it will still be the same. You change consciousness, the same human being, you will be sorted out. This is what we have to learn. This is the great lesson, that we change situations, circumstances, people, it doesn't work. Because we have not learned the lesson, we have not changed within. We have, for instance, love. We have not learned to love truly. Now, if you have not learned to love truly, it doesn't matter. You change 100 human beings, you will be the same. You'll again say, "Oh, no." At the end, you will say, "Oh, human life is like that. Everybody is imperfect. Everybody is bad." No. But when we learn to love truly, even if you have the worst kind of human beings right there with you, still you will be happy, because you will learn that it is not the love that you receive from somebody, but the love that you give makes you happy. Because when you give love, there is an empty space which is filled by the source. But when we receive love, we are trying to fill a little empty space from something outer. Now, when that person is gone, whether by death or through whatever way, there is an empty space. We don't know how to fill it. We never really knew how to fill it. We always felt, I'll fill it from this or that source. That source is gone, our so-called temporary source. Little instrument. We think instrument is everything. So we change. Okay, let me find another source. So after some time, that is also gone. All sources have limitation. But when we have learned to all the quality that the value that a person held for us, when we learn to receive them directly from the divine, if somebody's company gave us peace, how about having directly peace from the divine? If somebody's company made me happy, how about directly turning to the divine for happiness? So when we write the diary to the divine, we see that that empty space starts getting filled by the divine presence, because he comes, he's the real friend. And then we learn that, well, it was a very wrong or a mistaken approach towards life. Then we don't develop that vairagya, oh, life is all illusion, people are not good. That is ignorance. People who enter into that kind of vairagya are as ignorant as somebody who is indulging into it. But we learn that it's not people, it's the state of consciousness. And while I cannot change somebody else's state of consciousness, I can change mine. That's what is given to me. But all the time we are trying an outer way. Oh, somebody has gone away from my life. So, what when somebody is actually gone away, what do we do? So, what I suggest is that everybody has within oneself something very beautiful. And we should try to dwell on that. But what we do is, we dwell upon, not so much when somebody goes away, but when there is a heartbreak, we dwell upon badness and this and that. Well, we should just dwell upon the beautiful side of a relationship. Every relationship, whether it be with a child, with parents, relationship is not only about husband-wife, with a friend, with this or that. There is a beautiful side, and we should consciously try to relate to that, which means right from the beginning we should be vigilant. Even when we are married or we are in a relationship or friendship, whatever it be, parents, if we have learned to connect with that beautiful side, strangely, we don't have that kind of suffering. But when we are connected with all that was painful, then while on one side, we may feel even good riddance, God knows, but at the same time, we are hurt. Because we were hurt number of times, but we were giving back. It's like a tennis game going on. So you know what happens, who plays the last shot? So you were playing and the person was giving back, you were giving back. So it was like an interchange. And then there are lull periods when people are drinking fluids and they are washing their face with a towel, getting a massage done. So much of relationships are like that. They quarrel, separate, they come together, then for some time they enjoy, then again they quarrel. It's like a food of life. So when suddenly somebody who does the last shot and breaks away, you feel very hurt. The game is over. You are hurt, but you can't give back your hurt. But if we learn to love the beautiful side, then what happens? It's not that there is no sorrow, but this sorrow change is absorbed by the psychic. Because right from the beginning, the relation was, it was taking a psychic turn, a beautiful turn. Something where love has its little origin, like a spring from within our depths. And then even when the person is gone, you continue to love. Because you have learned to love. How do you continue to love? As they say, the last act of love is to free the person. If one truly loved, one would set a person free. If we don't set a person free, that means our love is selfish. We want the person for the sake of our own self. But when we truly love, we set the person free in every sense, in every detail, in the real sense of the word. And the last freedom is when one passes on to higher spheres, to another life. So it's where the test of love comes. That yes, one has set the person free, you move on. I move on with my experiences of life. We are not like, nobody is like a permanent passenger in a train. We each of us have our journeys. We each of us, even when we have the same station to go, we go through different approaches. Even two people who are believing in the same goal and the same guru, still they are moving through different approaches. And it's perfectly fine. So that's why the very closeness, too much closeness creates problem, because the ego tends to rub with each other. So there should be spaces in our togetherness. In sadhana, it is very much advised, don't sleep together. It's not just about sexuality, it's also because it unconscious exchange of things. So have your own room, space, even within the same house, because it helps. Otherwise the ego rubs, and after some time there is a constant kala, klesh, people stick on because, well, habit is a great thing. So, but it's a different thing altogether. So this little giving that space, and ultimately the final space is freedom. That you are free, each one is free. It's a fundamental truth to follow their own journey. So if we have not learned this lesson, then when a loss event takes place, we have to learn to learn that lesson. We have to understand that such is the truth of things. Every such, when an outer thing crashes, we can learn something beautiful about the truth of things. You know, when that famous story of that Mughal empress, when a very precious mirror that she had got from China, and it crashed because one lady maid was cleaning it, and it crashed, and it's so precious those days, you know, Chinese mal, but must have come, you know, for an empress, it must be a pakka mal, pretty expensive. So, but the lady empress was a mystic, but this maid goes and says, I'm so sorry, that precious mirror from China, it's gone. Now she's waiting, what will be the decree? So the empress stays quiet for a while, and then she says, very good, wonderful. That which was flattering my ego is gone. Good, it has gone. Now this is called discovering the truth behind things. So if we take it that all life is a discovery of truth, then life becomes beautiful and wonderful. Every experience, so we have to learn to take out the grain and separate the chaff. It is true of everything in life, whether it be a position which we may lose, prestige. If people were appreciating me for my outer things, for your rank, for your position, then it's not worth it. One day it is going to go away. And if it is hurting, that means I never knew to separate the wheat, the grain from the chaff. I was holding on to the chaff. But chaff is going to go one day. But people hold on. They hold on till old age because they don't want to lose it. They are afraid of losing it. What if I lose it and people don't respect me? Well, that respect was never worth it. So all these losses come to remind us of a deeper truth. They are a grace. We think when we get something, it's a grace. There is a greater grace when something is snatched away from us. Heaven's wiser love rejects the mortal's prayer. Only thing is, it needs courage, sincerity, and above all, trust in the divine to take it as a grace. And then life grows beautiful and everything becomes a step towards truth, towards love, towards beauty, towards bliss, towards peace, including the loss of everything that we cherish and value. Because it's only when we are ready to lose everything that we are ready to gain everything. Because all that we held on to is gone. The whole being is empty. Now it can be filled by divine love, divine sweetness, divine light, divine bliss. Otherwise, if the divine comes, there is no space. As such, we are so small. And we will like to probably keep him another chair. Lord, you have come. You can sit there. And there are plenty of other people. But the Lord is not like that. His love is extremely possessive. When he loves fully. He doesn't want half things because he is Purnamidam Purnamadam. Purnat Purnamudachyate. So he doesn't like all that game. If we love him, create in space. So when all is gone, then we are ready to gain all. We close with this line of Savitri, Book 3, Canto 2. All aims were lost in her, then found in her. His base was gathered in a one-pointed spire. Namaste.